Regenerative agriculture is essentially acknowledging that we have to rehabilitate the ecosystem in order to thrive. And it takes a plot of land from one point and it measurably improves it. So it returns it to a higher or more worthy state, essentially putting back more than it's taking out. And it's regenerative agriculture that we're really passionate about because it needs to happen in order for children of the future to be able to grow food and to have families that thrive.
Welcome to the Balancing Hormones Naturally podcast. This is your podcast host, Leah Brueggemann. I am a functional diagnostic nutritional practitioner. Here you are going to get actionable steps you can take today to start balancing your hormones naturally so that you can maximize your menstrual cycle for painless periods, more energy, and weight loss. Let's dive on in. You guys, I am so excited to tell you about this guest. So we have been trying to finagle our schedules for over a year to make this happen, and I finally get to talk to Autumn Smith, who is the founder of Paleo Valley, which makes me so happy. We're going to talk all about regenerative farming, where meat got a taboo of being bad, and just what you should look for in your meat, and it's such a good conversation. I'm going to totally warn you. I have no voice in this episode. I did not want to reschedule because it has been really tricky to try and get our schedules to match up in the first place to even be able to get her on. And so I was just, you know what? You are not here to listen to me on this episode. You're here to listen to Autumn. So enjoy. You guys know Paleo Valley has my all-time favorite meat sticks and electrolytes and beef organs. You can use the coupon code Leah to save 15% with them. And we also talk about meat subscription. And if you want to check out Wild Pastures and get 20% off, then I will put that link in the show notes for you to save. But just enjoy the conversation. You are going to learn some astonishing facts. So you're going to love it. All right, ladies. So we're here with Autumn Smith, and I have no voice, as we all can see. So she is the founder of Paleo Valley, which we know and love. So I'm going to let her kick it off and tell us, why did you start Paleo Valley? I'm just curious because I love everything you create, but like, why was the need? Where did it come from?
Yeah, well, basically when I was young, I had a lot of digestive issues and started when I was about 10. And the doctors diagnosed me with IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, which we now know doesn't really tell you what's going on at all. And they told me to take Beano and to relax.
Yeah, that's great.
That's the advice that I got. I did that. Nothing really changed. And so I kind of got into my teens and the gut issues started to manifest as mental health issues. And I just really started to struggle. And it was so bad that my parents actually kicked me out of our house before I even graduated high school.
Wow.
Yeah. So we did try all the talk therapy and the antidepressants and everything. But none of that worked for me. In fact, it made me feel worse and a little more hopeless and a little more disconnected from my own body's feedback. And I still made things happen, graduated high school, went to college, became a dancer, worked for Tracy Anderson as a celebrity fitness trainer. And it all looked fine from the outside. But then when my husband met me and got close to me, he was just like, wow, you are kind of a mess. You are suffering in silence and you're a fitness trainer, but you look pregnant after at night. You're like bunching, like you're crying every night. You're anxious. And he's just like, we gotta do something. And in LA, the doctors didn't really have an answer for me either. So he got a line. He found a few people down in 2007 that were using food as medicine. It was literally like Rob Wolf and Mark Sisson back in the day. And he was like, let's try it. And I thought, it's crazy. That's a crazy idea that food would be causing my digestive issues at that time seemed insane. But we tried a little 30-day challenge and my digestive issues went away completely in 30 days. And so then I shared it with 200 of my friends in a Facebook group. And I was like, guys, I think that we're onto something here. Do you want to try it? And so many people had great results. And over the course of the next year, my mental health improved so dramatically that we were like, let's figure out what's going on. Let's quit my job as a celebrity fitness trainer, even though I loved that job and it was wonderful. But I went back to school and found out, you know, food can be medicine, and just finished my doctorate. And what we found, the gap in the market was really for products. Because when I went on that, a world tour was my final assignment with Jennifer Lopez for Tracy Anderson. And I had found this amazing way to eat that made me feel vibrant and like myself again, but I couldn't maintain it because I couldn't always find the staples. You know, there weren't clean meat sticks. There wasn't all the products. And so when I got back to America, we started calling beef stick manufacturers with no experience. And the market responded really well to what we were producing. They saw the differences, and we just kept going from there. And Wild Pastures and having a son really motivated us to look at the way our food was not only impacting human health, but also the planet, because we'd heard that his generation might see a day where we can't grow our own food. And that really terrified us. So here we are.
100%. Yeah. That's so cool. I didn't know that you did that with Tracy Anderson. So that's a cool part of your story. So obviously Paleo Valley is very centered around meat, and we love meat. We love animal products over here. But do you think we could talk a little bit about why the whole idea started coming around as to why people start thinking meat is bad for your health? Like, where did that come from? Because people now are starting to go, oh, if I just don't eat any meat, like, then I'm eating really healthy, but they obviously don't feel that way.
I know, it is a fascinating thing. And I was shocked because I kind of avoided meat when I was young. Now, meat, you know, contains amino acids that become our neurotransmitters. And so I think it was one of the main reasons my brain health suffered. It also contains really highly bioavailable minerals. 2 billion people are mineral deficient in the world, right? And it's a really great tool for metabolic health too, because it keeps you full. It helps you to maintain lean muscle mass, which is so important as women age. And so when I had this transformation, I was like, wait a minute, I was avoiding it and I was a mess. And I wonder if this is playing into it. And so I started doing research and I found out religion, there's a few influences I want to touch on, but I think the one that will surprise people a lot is that religious influences have played a big part. So have you heard of Dr. Gary Fetke's story?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Have you talked about it on the podcast?
We did a couple, like maybe a year ago, I did an interview with somebody where we talked about that.
Okay. So basically he was a doctor who was silenced from talking about nutrition because he told his diabetic patient to reduce their sugar intake. The dietitian on staff, one of, or two of them, got angry, turned him into the medical board. And his wife, Belinda, watched him go through all of these proceedings for 4 years and present really valid science. And there was this expert witness that kept coming in. And she was like, where is this guy coming from? And he was coming from the cereal industry. And when you really peel back the curtain, you realize cereal companies were threatened by this, you know, lower carb, ketogenic, kind of like animal-centric medicine or approaches, because breakfast was supposed to be the first meal of the day, and eating cereal and carbohydrates is really great for their bottom line. But what she found is a cereal company in Australia specifically, the Seventh-day Adventists and John Harvey Kellogg actually founded cereal companies because they believed that meat made children have lustful desires and that masturbation. And so they created cornflakes and flaked wheat and corn. That's why John Harvey Kellogg founded a cereal company, because Ellen G. White, the prophetess of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, believed that eating meat made people sinful.
So, I didn't know this.
Okay. Yes.
We didn't talk about this.
Yeah, that took a turn. Okay, well, that's true. And the Seventh-day Adventists also, they have many patents. And the first meat alternative was actually made by Seventh-day Adventists as well. Yeah. And they have a lot of sway, American Dietary Guidelines committees. They're often on there. Loma Linda University, many of these universities coming out with these plant forward, plant-based diets, have Seventh-day Adventists behind it. And then Lena Cooper, she actually founded the American Dietetics Association, and she was also a Seventh-day Adventist. So there is just this lens that people Wow. are looking through in nutrition that is based on religion, and Ellen G. White's visions that a Garden of Eden diet did not include meat. So that's one. Religion is one. And then another one is Crisco. I don't know if you guys have heard the story of Crisco.
No, we haven't talked about that one.
Yeah. So back in, you know, when electricity was becoming a thing, and William Procter and James Gamble saw that they were not going to be using their lard or their cottonseed oil to make candles anymore. They had to figure out a use for cottonseed, which they had a surplus amount of. And they found out in 1910, they started hydrogenating oil, which created a hard fat, and it kind of looked like butter. And they tried to feed it to animals and it didn't work, but they realized, wow, what if we sold this as a butter alternative? And so they never substantiated the health benefits of it and instead just launched this genius marketing campaign and convinced American households that lard was a cleaner alternative to butter that would give their children better character and kind of just made it a thing. And now we know in the original formulation that Crisco had 50% trans fat, and which kills hundreds of people or hundreds of thousands of people every year due to its linked heart disease. But again, that kind of supplanted animal fats as the main cooking oil. And then we had research, Ansel Keys research, the 7 countries study and the 6 countries study, which purported to show that the more saturated fat you ate, the higher your risk of heart disease. We now know that the evidence around that association is an association. Many people objected to that back in the day. And saturated fats have kind of been exonerated. In fact, a study came out the other day, and this was just an associative study, so this isn't causal evidence, showing that as our rates of non-communicable diseases have increased, our saturated fat from animal products specifically have decreased. So their conclusion was saturated fats from animal products are inversely associated with our rising rates of disease. And then we had books like The Jungle, which highlighted the terrible conditions in factory farms and slaughterhouses, and that had a big effect. And then we have the sugar industry. So the sugar industry saw this saturated fat narrative as great for their bottom line, because if they could blame saturated fats for the rising rates of disease rather than sugar, that would be a really good story. And so they actually kind of co-opted some scientists to write a review. This recently just came out. I think it was a moral equivalent of like $50,000 for them to blame it on saturated fat and exonerate sugar. And so a lot of different influences, not as science-based as you might imagine, right? Yeah. We've been eating animal fats and meat for literally millions of years, and they're really important in the modern diet. And so I just did a docuseries about it because I think it's so important, especially for our children and people pregnant and all of that.
100%. And also, you are a doctoral candidate. Have you finished? Now?
I did.
Yeah. Yes. That's very, very cool. And what did you end up on getting your doctorate in?
Yeah, it's in holistic nutrition. And what I did was study, I don't know if you've heard of Dr. Van Vliet.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So Dr. Van Vliet, I joined in their project, the Beef Nutrient Density Project. Yeah. Because what I think is really interesting is, you know, the way that different production systems affect the nutritional composition of meat. I think it's something that people haven't understood entirely, but that's what I worked on for my dissertation.
So a lot of electrolytes will use synthetic or isolated compounds to make their electrolytes versus kind of looking at it from a whole food-based form. And I think electrolytes are one of those things that I would say most people need. Most people need electrolytes. You're going to notice a difference in brain function, hormone function, energy levels. Literally, you're going to actually be hydrated versus just drinking a ton of water. But it's kind of a slippery slope of looking at ingredients, because you want to make sure that by taking electrolytes, you're doing something for your health. You don't want to be filling your electrolytes with garbage, which unfortunately there are a lot of companies out there that do that. And you know, it's important. You need to learn about your companies and you learn about transparency. And that's why we use Paleo Valley. So my favorite flavor is the lemon lime. So I actually will always send a care package to any of my friends that have a new baby. I always send them electrolytes, because if they're going to be breastfeeding, they're going to need a lot more hydration. And I just think that it's a wonderful thing to do for them to, you know, have a little bit of that pamper time with something with that tastes really good, ingredients are good for you, is going to benefit you. And I always send them the lemon lime flavor because that is my favorite flavor. But Paleo Valley doesn't use stevia. So they use monk fruit. So if you have an issue with stevia, this is going to be great for you. They also are from whole food based form. So the potassium is from the organic coconut water. They have no added sugars. They do have seaweed extract. So, I mean, it's literally as whole food as you can get with electrolytes, but you're also getting the essential minerals that you're needing from an electrolyte. So it's the sodium to potassium ratio is really good, which was one of the main reasons why I looked into them and started using them, because I was looking for a good sodium to potassium ratio. And then I was also looking for something without stevia. And I also wanted it to taste good. So, you know, all those things are necessary. You can go to paleovalley.com/Leah to save 15%. That's paleovalley.com. And the coupon code is Leah, L-E-A-H, to save 15%.
Very, very cool. And well, that's one of the big things that I know both Wild Pastures and Paleo Valley stands on is regenerative farming. And can we talk about why that's important, not only for like the quality of our food, but also the quality of our soil?
Yeah, it's really, really important because like I said, when we got pregnant and when we had Maverick, we realized there might be a day where Maverick can't grow his own food because we essentially, that thin layer of topsoil that we have, 98% of our calories come from that topsoil. And estimates vary that, you know, between 30 and sometimes all the way up to 70% of our soil has been degraded worldwide. Now, people will throw a lot of numbers around, you know, 60 harvests left, 80 harvests left. Soil deteriorates at different rates in different places. And so there is no definitive answer to how much time we have. But I do know that it is essentially an existential threat. Because if we can't grow food and soil is the basis of our economy, everything we grow or everything we sell, we're growing as well. Our antibacterial agents like antibiotics, they can come from the soil as well. And so there's three types of agriculture happening today. One is conventional agriculture with its chemicals and its fertilizers and its pesticides and its tillage. And we're essentially taking out more than we're putting back in. And that's been happening for about 10,000 years. You know, we've just been kind of like raping the land, so to speak. And then there's sustainable. And a lot of people have been talking about sustainable agriculture, and it's a great step in the right direction. But because we have 2/3 of our soil broken and our biodiversity is going down, our ability to hold water in the soil has been destroyed. We can't really maintain or sustain this level and expect future generations and even ourselves to nourish. And, you know, the nutrient content in our food is at the lowest point it's ever been as well. And so, and then there's regenerative. So regenerative agriculture is essentially acknowledging that we have to rehabilitate the ecosystem in order to thrive. And it takes a plot of land from one point and it measurably improves it. So it returns it to a higher or more worthy state, essentially putting back more than it's taking out. And it's regenerative agriculture that we're really passionate about because it needs to happen in order for Maverick and all the children of the future to be able to grow food and to have families that thrive. And just have farmers too. We have farmers caught in a system that is not beneficial for them. A lot of them are barely making ends meet. And with regenerative agriculture, you can create multiple streams of income and farmers and ranchers kind of get to free themselves from just creating food based on these subsidies and in a system with chemicals and fertilizers. And people seem really, really excited about that aspect too.
Yeah. So if you're a regenerative farmer, when it comes to beef, for example, what does that look like? Like, what do they have to do in order to be a regenerative farmer?
Yeah. So the ones that we work with, and you know, there are so many flavors of different operations. That's what I learned from working on the project. I mean, like, in a factory farm, it's very uniform, right? But when you get away from that type of commoditized model, it can look many different ways. But our requirements are, you know, we're not using pesticides, not using antibiotics, you're not using hormones. Animals are living their lives on pasture, right? This is even organic beef, for example, isn't always on pasture. It has to be out there, I think, like 120 days a year. They can still get organic corn and soy. So the farmers and ranchers that we work with, they're on grass, they're eating grass exclusively for their life. And they're also moving them in a highly managed way. I don't know if you're familiar with Alan Savory's work.
No, I'm not.
Okay, so Alan Savory, he was a rangeland ecologist in Africa, always passionate about the environment, and he was trying to help stop the deforestation that was happening. Now, he and many of his colleagues decided that the way to do that was to cull 40,000 elephants, right? Because he, like many people, believe that animals are inherently destructive to the environment.
Okay.
But when he did that, what do you think happened?
Well, things did not turn out the way they were supposed to.
No, it got worse. And so he went back and to the drawing board and figured out, well, what just happened, and came upon this man named Andrew Vasson's work. And he said, animals have been evolving with these ecosystems. In fact, ruminant impact is the reason we had such fertile soil in the beginning. But animals that are existing in the wild, because they're pooping and peeing and moving, they're creating little divots in the ground that water can live, the seeds can germinate. And what they do is they go and eat in a place, and then they move, because either a predator is going to make them move, or they're not going to want to eat where they're just, pooping. So what they did was create a system that mimicked the predator-prey cycles in the wild. It's called rotational grazing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
And so, you're moving the animals. And a lot of regenerative farmers have gotten really specific about how this is done and how many days. You have to pay a really close attention to your land and in order to determine the perfect amount of time to move them. But a lot of them are moving them daily and seeing their ecosystems thrive. Biodiversity coming back, water holding capacity coming back. And that's a really important issue that I don't think a lot of people realize, is that cows, ruminants, can actually improve our ability to hold water in the soil. So it can reduce runoff and flooding and reduce drought, even potentially wildfires. And so animals are not inherently destructive to the environment. And when we work with someone, no antibiotics, no hormones, no pesticides, moving animals in a highly managed way and making sure that they're measurably improving the health of their ecosystem and their farm and ranch.
Yeah. Which you mentioned a couple labels in there, which I think is a good question. How can you become good at interpreting labels on animal products? Because I know something that you guys say on your website is grass-fed and absolutely no grain ever. You're very specific about that. So why do you guys put that? Could you explain a little bit more why we should become better label readers?
Absolutely. Because there's a lot of shenanigans in the meat. It's like the Wild West out there, right? So people are seeing the tide turn and that consumers want meat that doesn't come from factory farms. So what they do is greenwash. I don't know if you've talked about greenwashing, but it's essentially making a product look more healthful, more warm and fuzzy than it really is. And so, you can say grass-fed. As of 2016, it isn't a regulated term anymore. All cows begin their lives on grass. That's just how it works. And so technically they're not lying, but they're also not speaking to the point that might be more relevant for consumers. It's like, what did the animal consume in the last 90 to 120 days? And we like grass because that's the diet that they naturally evolved to consume. And as my researcher, Dr. Van Vliet's research has elucidated, that it leads to profound changes in the fatty acid profile, less omega-3s, a higher omega-6 to omega-3 ratio, and also phytonutrients. We didn't always think about plant compounds ending up in your meat, but his research had shown there's literally 40,000 different compounds that make up meat. And so the differences are very, very dramatic. And so I want those phytonutrients in my meat because I think they're satiating, and you're also getting all of these nutrients in that you wouldn't otherwise be able to consume. I think they're probably one of the reasons that it's burning your meat could be more healthful when there are these phytonutrients in there. These phytonutrients are kind of protective as well. And also, the fatty acid profile, I think, is something that's really important. I've gotten into studying omega-3s and omega-6s. And so the minute you feed an animal grain, you're going to have more omega-6s. That's very, very well demonstrated. And these omega-6s, they lead, when they are high in higher proportion than a 1-in-1 ratio, they can lead to the production of compounds in your body that are pro-inflammatory and that make it harder for inflammation to shut off. That's why the omega-6-to-3 ratio is really, really important. And so organic isn't the same as grass-fed. And some companies using 100% grass-fed, they will be sincere, but you don't know based on the label. And like I said, organic beef can come from a farm where they're eating organic corn and soy. These are grains, and that would change the fatty acid profile. And they don't always have to be out on pasture. And then the one that drives me really crazy is with chicken, free range and cage free. These like are supposed to be meaningful labels. And in some cases they might be, but they can also mean the bird's still raised in just a warehouse with thousands of others on top of each other, just not in a cage. And I don't think that's what you think of. Or free range can mean, again, they're in a warehouse with thousands of other birds, and all they have to have is a door that the bird might go out of. Just access, which isn't exactly the same as a bird out on pasture, you know, part of a diversified or healthy system that's helping to regenerate landscapes and soil health.
So you're looking for, on your beef, are you looking for it to specifically say then no grain ever?
Oh, good question. So I actually did an entire Rethink Meat episode about this. It's episode 6. So what I would do if I were you and I were really passionate is, you know, use something, someone you trust like Wild Pastures or third party verification. That's the only way you can really know. So the American Grass-Fed Association will come in and verify that your meat is in fact raised according to their standards, because the FSIS, the Food Safety and Inspection Service, they regulate labels for the USDA. And there was a recent report that 85% of these labels lacked sufficient substantiation, meaning no one, you know, at the government level, like the USDA level, is really looking and taking, the farmers are often writing affidavits about what's happening, but no one is checking. But if you get third party certification, organic will have a third party certification. So that is one exception. Or American Grass-Fed Association. There's certified humane if you're more worried about humane treatment of animals. But American Grass-Fed Association is the one that I would look for.
Okay, that makes sense. And then how would that apply to like chickens? What do you look for there?
Yeah, so chickens, I would look for certified humane, but also pasture raised. You know, so, and again, if you want to call the company, you can, but pasture-raised chicken is, typically they are out on pasture. It might not mean they're out on pasture their whole lives, but pasture-raised chicken is the best way to go. And certified humane, Animal Welfare Institute also, they have, certifications to ensure that the birds are treated humanely.
Okay. That makes sense. 'Cause we want to actually make sure we're getting what we're paying for. So I think one of the biggest things people say then after they hear all those labels is, I can't afford that meat. So how do you afford quality meat?
Yeah, that's such a good question. And I know a lot of people will just say it's a matter of priorities, right? And what are we prioritizing? But our company, Wild Pastures, that was the whole problem, is because I was a holistic nutritionist for so long and I would tell people about these nuances, and it just has to be accessible and it has to be convenient, or it's really hard for people today. And so that's what we did. We just partner with American Regenerative Farmers. And the biggest part of our business model is that it's going to be cheaper. So it's 40% less than other meat delivery services. We work really, really hard to do that. So the prices are pretty equivalent, but they're from American Regenerative Farms. And so that is my favorite way to do it. And because it's domestic, right? We're not most grass-fed beef. So 75% of the grass-fed beef in America is imported. So again, by not importing it, we're saving money for the consumer there. And also because we have Paleo Valley and Wild Pastures, we get whole animal utilization, really important to us. So our bones go into our bone broth. Our tallow goes into our burger restaurant. We sell our tallow, right? And so we're just not wasting. We're really passionate about not wasting. And then we're using like solar powered facilities and recyclable bags and just thinking about it every step of the process. How do we save the consumer money? How do we keep it as close to the source as possible? We have warehouses throughout the country. So it is possible. It's been a really hard business because there's so many moving parts, but we're really, really devoted to making sure that people, whoever wants to afford this type of meat, is able to do that without breaking the bank.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know how often like Wild Pasture has sales and stuff, but like I know Paleo Valley, like the subscription always saves a lot of money. And then you guys often have sales. And I am so bad about, like, I'll be like, oh, I'm going to remember to order my beef organs. I take beef organs every single day. And this happened to me 3 days ago. I, like, used my last bottle or my last, like, serving. And I thought I had one downstairs. And I went downstairs and there was none. And I'm like, Leah, why did you cancel your subscription? I thought I had too many bottles. And so I was like, oh, I'll just pause it for now. It was not intelligent.
Oh no, you poor thing. Yeah, so, those organs, they really matter in energy-wise.
Yeah, they do. And I take mine, I have a subchorionic hematoma, and so I take mine during pregnancy to really help with iron. Like, it really, 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 really helps. So, yeah.
Have you heard about the research on that?
Do
you
know?
Oh, okay. Can I tell you?
Yeah.
So in 1934, there were three scientists that won a Nobel Prize for the finding that beef liver cured pernicious anemia. And they didn't realize before, they thought it was something that the body was something that was happening to the body or something that the body was consuming. But then they realized it was something the body was missing. And because beef liver contains not only iron, but the retinol and the copper and the B12, and it's in that whole food source, it's really able to raise iron levels in a way that simply iron supplementation a lot of times can't. And I know, not a doctor, not giving medical advice, but I've had so many people tell me, I've gotten off of iron infusions, I couldn't get my iron up. I mean, this is just a story that I've heard over and over. And I want to emphasize, because I know iron levels for women can be really hard sometimes. I used to struggle with it, but not since organ meats.
I utilize beef organs all the time for low iron in clients, but I took them prior to conception and just continued through my pregnancy. And when I was actually at the hospital, when they diagnosed me with the hemorrhage, they were like, why are your iron levels so good when you just bled so much? I'm like, do you want me to tell you that I take beef organs, or are we just going to continue past that fact?
I love that. But yeah, it's just something I hear over and over and over and over. So that's really cool that you already knew about it. But
yeah, it makes such a big difference. So I would like to talk about the ingredients a little bit in your guys' products, because we've been using your meat sticks for, I don't know, a really long time now. I've lost track. And when I was making our non-toxic gift guide for Black Friday this past year, and I did a whole section for men, I asked my husband, like, what would he want on there? And he's like, meat sticks. I was like, you want meat sticks on a gift guide? He's like, yes, I eat those every single day.
Learn my three secrets to balancing hormones naturally in a free training. So this is going to be for you if you have painful periods, irregular cycles, you have PCOS, PMDD, you can't lose weight no matter what, you're dealing with hormonal acne, hormonal migraines, if you're dealing with the mood swings, pre-period, PMS, anything connected to an hormonal imbalance, this is going to be for you. Just go to freehormonetraining.com and save your spot for the free training. Again, that's freehormonetraining.com and save your spot.
And we've had other meat sticks before, and he's just never gravitated towards them. And same thing, my kids eat them. They love them. So, and I love the ingredients. And one of the biggest things I really, really like about them is the natural fermentation. So could you talk about that a little bit? Like, what is encapsulated citric acid? Like, why do we typically see that in beef sticks, et cetera?
Yes. Now, I think the reason they're so different is they're just like juicy. They're not like hard and tough and really dried out. And like you said, it's because of the fermentation process. So this came about because when I went to Paris on that tour, my husband brought me these grass-fed beef sticks, and they still did not sit right with my stomach. And so when we got back to America, I was like, I'm going to figure out how to make a beef stick that's actually clean, that I can actually. So I called up all these manufacturers, and we decided, Chaz and I, like, oh, our ancestors fermented meat. And it sounded kind of weird, but I realized all these things that were ancestral were really helping. So we might as well try it out. And it took about 200 phone calls to manufacturers, because this process does not make sense. It's not lucrative. It takes four times as long. And so we finally found one. But basically, fermentation, all you have to do is you add this substrate, and then you add the bacteria, and they convert carbohydrates degrades into lactic acid, which drops the pH in a very natural way. And it even can create probiotics and a very rich flavor, but something that's also very gut friendly. That's the thing I hear so much from people is that I can actually eat this. I don't get acid reflux. This doesn't bother my stomach. And that's because of the fermentation process. Now, we found out the industry standard was something called encapsulated citric acid. And the manufacturers couldn't understand why I wanted to avoid this ingredient because all you had to put on the label was citric acid. But I didn't want something that just wouldn't look bad. I wanted something that I would actually feel really good about putting in beef sticks. So this ingredient comes from genetically modified corn and then hydrogenated, a lot of times like vegetable oil or cottonseed oil. So seed oils and GMOs, and they make these little beads that then they put in the meat and then it melts in. And then that drops the pH.
That's
and,
gross.
You know, I was just like, okay, well, that, you know, could be a reason that it's bothering my stomach. And so we just left that out. We decided to ferment them. And because it's like grass-fed meat with fermentation, all you really need is organic spices because it's so flavorful all on its own. When then, of course, we left out MSG, gluten, sugar. I mean, just all of these other unnecessary things, these fillers that just end up in beef sticks. We thought, like, let's just let it be beef and spices and just make it delicious. And I think it really is. We have beef and we have chicken and we have venison and we also have pork. And so we have lots of variety, lots of flavors. But definitely, I have a Polish friend who tells me it's like a kielbasa or one of those like hickory smoked summer sausages. It's more like that than like a jerky, like a meat stick.
It's definitely more moist than like typical meat sticks. I lived on the venison during my first trimester. I had so many meat aversions, and I don't know why the venison sat so well, but like I had those all the time.
You know what? It's so funny because me too, growing up in Montana, I had it in my youth, but it contains like higher levels of omega-3s if you want like a maybe potentially in your body needs omega-3s when you're pregnant. And so maybe it's something like that because it is. It's a stronger flavor, I would say, but it is leaner meat and higher in omega-3s. So maybe that's something, but I love them too. The venison are my favorite. And the chicken.
Yeah, the venison sit top of our, we go through those probably the fastest, I would say. And then the summer sausage ones.
Oh, my favorite. Actually, those are the only meat ones or the beef ones that I can eat because I have a garlic sensitivity, but they are very good.
Yeah.
Very
good. Yeah. They are very good. Okay, so since we kind of touched on the organ complex a little bit for iron, can we talk about why did you make it a complex versus like just like beef liver or, you know, just an organ by itself?
Yes, because I'm really into just diversifying. I think there's like such wisdom in whole foods. And like I said, tens of thousands of compounds in whole foods. And I want people to get the most bang for their buck. So liver, you know, highest natural source of vitamin A and vitamin B12, obviously very bioavailable iron. But heart has something called CoQ10. Many people believe like heart issues can at least partially be attributed to a CoQ10 deficiency. It's something a lot of us don't get in our daily diet. And then kidney is a really great source of selenium, which is really important for the thyroid. And there's this principle in traditional medicine, like cures like, meaning if you had an eye issue, you would go eat an eye. If you have a liver issue, you'd want to eat a liver. And so each different organ is kind of this reservoir of different nutrients that support the various organs in your body. And so we wanted to create a complex where you could just get as much potent nutrition as possible. Something that else that's really different about our complex is the amounts are higher than most of them. So it is a very, like, it's nature's multivitamin. And we wanted to just diversify as much as possible.
Yeah.
And I do not want to eat organ meats. Like, I am a person, my husband and I, we tried so hard to make it palatable and make it work in our diet. And I'm just not going to eat them. So I wanted to be able to take them anyway and people to be able to eat them too.
They are definitely hard to eat. I'm not going to lie. I definitely think that's the cheapest way to get them in. But if you're not going to eat them, then is it really the cheapest way? I will even take the capsules. I'll open them when I make beef dishes and like sprinkle them in so my kids can eat them. That way it's a really easy way for them to get the beef organs too.
Yeah. And I've even, when our son was little, would put it on his eggs. And he didn't seem to notice that too much either. So
that I've not tried. I feel like if I changed the color, they're going to come for me.
He was a lot younger. Maybe it was like when he was very young, he didn't notice.
Okay. So the last supplement that you guys have that I want to, well, you have a lot more, but the one I want to talk about is one that, again, I didn't discover a love for until I was pregnant. And that was the apple cider vinegar complex. And I always had used it when I was traveling because I noticed that it helped with digestion when I was traveling. But when I was pregnant, I started getting heartburn, and I have never had heartburn in my entire life. And so that was kind of weird, especially since I know a lot of times we're like heartburn, H. pylori, and I tested negative for that. Like it wasn't the thing. So I'm like, okay, this is odd. So I started taking just one capsule actually before every meal. And it made such a difference. So why did you create that? I mean, obviously for people like me that don't want heartburn, but.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. So the story first is that my husband and I, when we first got married, we were like, okay, what can we do on a daily basis to really support longevity? Because we wanted to make it to 110. And we found, you know, turmeric, ginger, apple cider vinegar, these foods that I wasn't getting a lot of in my daily diet had so many benefits. Now, as you're speaking to the apple cider vinegar, the acetic acid, it's a very acidic substance. And a lot of people think heartburn is because we have too much acid, but many times it's because we have like the lower esophageal sphincter is we have carbohydrates that are sitting in our stomach and then they're fermenting and then they're opening the valve and then the acid is coming into the wrong place. So if we can add acid back into the stomach, because a lot of people don't have enough stomach acid actually, then it can create an acidic environment where that doesn't happen and it kind of prevents heartburn. And so that's the mechanism, the proposed mechanism by which apple cider vinegar is able to reduce acid reflux, but also creating a more acidic environment can improve mineral absorption as well, which I was really excited about. It helps me a lot with satiety and just cravings. I have a really gnarly sweet tooth, or I did in my previous day, and apple cider vinegar has been demonstrated to actually make people eat less, pretty effortlessly, like 100 to 300 calories less every day. It also keeps your blood sugar really stable. And so apple cider vinegar, it also, it helps fat burning. So there's so many beautiful uses for apple cider vinegar and turmeric. We can just talk about turmeric all day long. We added turmeric and ginger and cinnamon into the mix because of their inflammatory benefits, anti-inflammatory benefits for turmeric. It shuts off something called NF-kappa B, which is like an inflammatory pathway. And so it has so many different benefits for so many different conditions because we know most things are related to inflammation today. And then ginger. Ginger is also probably one of those ingredients in there that's helping with digestion. Mm-hmm. It helps that digestive fire. It's actually anti-parasitic, which is why you have ginger before sushi. And then cinnamon will keep your blood sugar stable. Yeah, that is why they give it to you. It helps. And so many different benefits for all these spices that most Americans just aren't consuming enough. And the cinnamon too is going to help with your brain and also keep your blood sugar nice and stable. And so we were drinking apple cider vinegar. We created this morning tonic. And then I have a friend who's a dentist who told me, stop telling people to drink apple cider vinegar. It's going to ruin their teeth. And so we decided to encapsulate it because you can just swallow it and still get the benefits without the acidic environment you're creating that could potentially leach the minerals in your mouth. And so that's why it's different from like gummies and just shooting apple cider vinegar because it's actually protecting your teeth as well.
Yeah, well, gummies like don't have any benefit.
And it's funny because a lot of people take it for blood sugar support, but these gummies have like 7 grams of sugar in the serving. So I know.
And it's like, well, I think we kind of lost it somewhere along the line.
Unfortunately, you did. Yeah.
Okay. So before we wrap up, can we just talk a little bit about how Wild Pastures works? Because if someone is interested in maybe sourcing their meat from there, what does that kind of look like for them?
Yeah, it's a really simple process. Basically, you decide if you want 15-pound box or 25-pound box, you can totally customize it. And then it just comes to your door and it shows up frozen solid and in recyclable packaging. Sometimes it comes through the mail delivery, depending on where you're living, but we do local deliveries wherever we can. And we have warehouses everywhere. And so, yeah, you choose your meats. There's also wild-caught seafood. We're moving into shrimp, and even hot dogs are coming soon. You know, beef, chicken, and pork, all from pastured and grass-fed and finished operations here in America, where farmers are going beyond grass-fed, beyond organic, and regenerating the environment. But yeah, it really, it's convenient. It's 40% less than other meat delivery services. And all you have to do is sign up, customize your box. And we work with you if you have to put it on pause or, you know, whatever you need to do. Our customer service is exceptional. And we even have a Wild Pastures community Facebook page where people daily share their recipes. I even saw a thread the other day, actually last night, it was really fascinating that people were saying, have you guys noticed that you're losing weight simply from this meat? And they're thinking, and a lot of people were like, yeah, I think I am. I'm more satiated. I'm having to eat less. It's just interesting. It's a very active, and they're constantly posting recipes. We also have a recipe book because it is a little bit different to cook pastured meats. But we take you through that process. It's a really nice book. So we're just trying to hold your hand and make it easy and affordable at every step, but it's a really, really pretty effortless process.
Yeah. We'll have a link in the show notes that I think also can get you 20% off. So you'll be able to check that out. That's where I think we need to go for our chicken, because my father-in-law actually raises his own cows. Nice. I don't even know if you do. It's not growing cows. You raise cows.
I say raise.
Yeah. And they are grass-fed, and he is definitely like out there moving his cows every day. They taste amazing. And we have the same thing for pork, but I have never been able to find good chicken ever.
When I tell you that is that's the hardest part, because there are so few people in America doing it the way that we want to. We've actually had to start going and maybe starting operations ourselves. But you're right. Pasture chicken is really hard to find. And we keep it really, really close to like the regenerative and pastured. We are not deviating from that, but most meat delivery services do. And that's why, because it's just really hard to do. But we have really, really good relationships, and our chicken is so flavorful. Mm. We know the pain.
It's hard. Yeah.
It's really, really hard.
I mean, it's pretty easy to find organic chicken. And it's pretty easy for them to say free range, but like, yeah, I don't know. It's been a search.
Yeah, it's really hard. That's why, yeah, we're just trying to make it easy for people. And we will go into, we're actually working on different ways to optimize the nutritional profile, because most people don't realize that conventional chicken has a really high omega-6-to-3 ratio compared to even beef. So it's, and chicken is what Americans are eating most of. So we see a large opportunity. It is, yeah, to help people feel better and just get more accessibility to chicken. But that's, we have to get in there and create the farms.
A really good point, because I feel like people primarily do eat chicken. But then on top of that, I've seen like pasture raised chicken breasts. They're smaller than like regular chicken, like that you get at the store. It's like they pump it full of something. I don't know what.
Yeah. Conventional chicken, they do. There's like a saline solution that they do actually add. And yeah, pasture chicken is smaller, but far more flavorful, and contains, you know, depending on the study, sometimes more minerals, more protein, but definitely a lower omega-6-to-3 ratio. Like conventional chicken can be like 20-to-1 and above. Whereas I thought this was a really surprising finding from the dissertation, even grain fed meat is probably around 8-to-1, 9-to-1.
20-to-1.
Yeah, chicken is way up there. That's why Chaz, my husband, is like growing forage in our basement, because we're trying to figure out how can we feed chickens other than grass, you know, because they do eat something other than grass. Chickens do, they're omnivores. They're not like a ruminant, but in a way that we can actually optimize that nutritional profile. But you know, like 9 to 1, the chicken ratio in pasture chicken, much lower, but in conventional chicken can be 20 to 1, 25 to 1, depending on, you know, what they're eating.
That's crazy. I don't think that I've ever heard that anywhere because everyone always says chicken is so healthy for you because it's low fat.
Oh no. And pork is the same actually. Conventional pork has a ratio 30 to 1. We have a regenerative pork farmer. I know it's crazy. And he ran his own experiment and he had to get the right pork genetics. And, but he took that 30 to 1 ratio down to a 5 to 1 ratio just by putting them on pasture, right? Most animals, most pigs are not living a life on pasture and they're just being fed grains primarily. So yeah, it's interesting what you can do. And the fact that chicken and pork are actually, if you're looking at it through that lens of the omega 6 to 3 ratio, maybe a worse choice than just grass-fed and even grain-fed beef.
Which is crazy because they always say that grain or beef is the higher in the fat, so it's going to be harder in all of the omegas. It's like, no, that's crazy. That's good to know. Yeah, I didn't know that.
That's it for you.
That away. Store that away in my brain.
Yeah, it's crazy. There's some really cool research coming out around that, even at Utah State. So we'll all know more soon.
Yeah.
But, you know, it takes like 10 to 15 years for what's happening in academia to get to the mainstream, but
yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your time and listening to my lost voice.
I just feel so bad for you, but I know.
It happens, but it was all about you today. So they only had to listen to me for a couple seconds. So I appreciate you very much coming on.
I appreciate you too. And thank you for having me. It was an honor.
Of course.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of Balancing Hormones Naturally. If you found this helpful, I would love for you to share it with a friend and post it on your stories and tag Balancing Hormones Naturally podcast so we can get this message out. You can find me on Instagram at Leah_BRUEG, and I would absolutely love to hear from you.